Thank you again for the opportunity to share my heart with you, and I've been enjoying the morning so far. Sometime back in the fall of 1968, there was a little boy, 10-year-old boy, was riding his bicycle. It was a brand new bicycle. It was a Stingray. Back in the day, 1968, the Stingrays. How many of you had a Stingray, by the way? Yeah. All right. This Stingray was pretty spiffy. It was painted gold, and it had tiger handle grips on it. It also had a vinyl leopard seat, a banana seat, they used to call it, with even a sissy bar in the back, they called that. This was a cool bike, and this little boy loved his bike. And boy used to like to also take his steal playing cards from his parents and take the clothespins and stick them on the front spokes. And so when you would ride it, it would just go. And so this bike was freedom for this boy, because he could just ride around the neighborhood, and ride around the neighborhood as he chose. And he loved that bike. But one day he was riding this bike, and he noticed the bully in the neighborhood was up near a corner, and the bully had a bow and arrow with him. It was a bow and arrow that was like a play bow and arrow. You remember the kind that had the little rubber tips on the arrows, right? You could shoot them into the windows, you know, and it would just stick. But the bully this time had arrows that he had taken the tips off of them. So the boy was riding his bike down the road, and an arrow just whizzed right by him. And he knew that the bully was there, so he turned his bike around and somehow made it back away and left the bully back there. Now, I don't know why the boy did this, but he decided to turn around and go back down there again. So he turned his bike around and he rode back down there. Another arrow flew at him and whizzed by. He tried to turn around, but the bully caught him. And so the bully then caught him and got on back of the bike with him on that banana seat. Could fit two, got on back of him, and the bully took his bow and arrow and put it around his neck. And all he said to him was, "You ride, just start pedaling." So the boy pedaled as hard as he could with this other guy on there, and every time he slowed down, he choked him a little more with his string. And this went on for some time, and they finally stopped in front of the bully's house. And the bully asked the boy, "What's your father's name?" And so the boy told him. And he said, "I want you to curse your father." And he said, "I'm not going to do it." But he choked him harder and harder. And eventually he choked him so hard, "If you don't curse your father, I'm going to kill you." And so the boy cursed his father. He cursed his father, and the bully let him go and said, "You're free to go." So the boy rode home on his bike, changed forever. So if you were that boy and someone was choking you to curse your father, what would you do? What would you do if you were in that position? Now this young boy, he loved his father, but he had a kind of a complicated with his father in the first place, because his father, he knew his father loved him, but his father had a violent temper and anger. And it was explosive. And as the boy caved in, he carried that shame for that for the next 40 years. He carried the shame of this event, of knowing that he cursed his father. Can any of you relate to the boy in the story? By the way, can any of you relate to times in your life where something has happened to you, where there was a deep wounding or a deep pain has been inflicted upon you by another, and you've just carried this for years and years? Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about this morning about some good news, and it has to do with our scripture that we're talking about this morning. And continuing on Arden's study on the Beatitudes, it's a short Beatitude, Matthew 5:7. Something very simple Jesus said in the midst of his deep teachings. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive what? Mercy. We've heard it probably a million times, haven't we? But this particular beatitude, when Arden asked me if I would preach while he was sunning himself in Hawaii, I gladly accepted, because mercy has had a major effect on my life. It's reshaped my life. It's reshaped how I see the world, how I see everything. It's paid a big definition of it. But before we get started, what is the definition of mercy, by the way? What do you think of when you think of mercy? Compassion, and I looked it up in the dictionary, and compassion or forgiveness. Yeah. Not getting what you deserve. Mercy, yeah. Well, I looked it up in the dictionary just so I would be accurate in my definition. But here's a dictionary said, Webster said, mercy is compassion or forgiveness shown to someone when it's in somebody's power to do punish or harm. Okay? You got the power to punish them. You have that power to harm them or punish them. You've got the power, and you choose not to. That's mercy. So, and a key ingredient of mercy is that mercy always includes forgiveness. It does. It always includes forgiveness. And each of us, at one time or another, we're going to be confronted. Maybe we have already, or more, we're going to be confronted with something that happens to us. And we're going to have to make a choice of how do we respond to others. When we have the power to show mercy to somebody, or when we have the power to punish or harm that person, we got a choice to make. And but a guiding thought, as I think about this, this is exactly why Jesus talked about this in the Sermon on the Mount. Many people look at the Sermon on the Mount or the Beatitudes as kind of a re-describing the Ten Commandments. And actually, he goes way past the Ten Commandments, because even a simplistic view of the Ten Commandments would be an eye for an eye. It's like, well, you know, you hit me, I'll hit you back. That's even. How many times when you're a kid, you know, you get into the thing, you hit each other. Okay, we're even now. No, we're even. You keep hitting each other. It's a cycle that never seems to stop. But Jesus wants to cut through some of the things that are so destructive for us as human beings. I love Emily mentioning the word fetter and talking about fetter. It's like chains that get put on your shackles that get put on your legs, and your legs are tied together and you just can't hardly move. You're fettered. Jesus wants to cut through many of the things that can fetter us, that jam us up. And forgiveness is one of those things, or lack thereof, or showing a lack of mercy. When we think about mercy, and this beatitude especially, for those who, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy, he's describing something as simple as like the law of gravity. You know, pick up something, and if you drop it, you let go of it, it's going to fall to the ground. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy, is a law of nature. A law of nature. And Jesus said it in the opposite way. Judge not, lest you be judged. Another law of nature. These two things we have to wrestle with together. Judgment and mercy. And sometimes they're not easy things to balance. But there is a truth. If you're a judgmental person, you are going to feel judged. If you are an unmerciful person, you will not feel mercy. It's a law of nature. Now, when we think about this, when I've thought about this idea of receiving God's mercy, it really started to open my heart to see God in some new ways and change my heart. Now, Jesus regularly taught of God's mercy, right? When we read through the Bible, it's not hard to see it. Jesus talked about it a lot, and it's ongoing. For instance, one of the ways that he says God shows his mercy to the world is the sun comes up every day. Now, we love it when we see the sun. I mean, and I hate to tell you this, but I was in Southern California for the last 2.5 weeks, and it was sunny every day, and it was almost 80 degrees every day. So, sorry, but it's... not that much, but it's a wonderful gift. Every time that sun comes up, every time I'd see that sun, it's a gift. And just to stand at it and to experience it, it's a way that God, every day, God says to us, I love you. And the rain, as annoying as the rain can be for us living in the Pacific Northwest, there are other places in the country that don't get rain. And they need it. And so we look at who God is, and God doesn't look at the earth and say, I'm going to only have it be nice and sunny for the good people, and I'm going to have it be cloud and bad for the bad people. No. God's mercy and love is for all people, not just Americans, even not just born-again Christians. It's for all people. It's for all people. So God's mercy. And then Jesus also tells incredible stories about forgiveness. Actually, they're stories that defy logic because they're so crazy. And you know the story of the unmerciful servant who's in debt up to his eyeballs with the boss for $1 million. It's an astronomical figure. He's so in debt to his master. When his master calls him into account, he says, I'll pay you back. And of course, the story goes when Jesus, the master, forgives him his debt. But that's amazing. I mean, if you had just found out you'd been swindled by your employee for the last 20 years and they've taken $1 million from you, would you be that willing to forgive them for that? Well, Jesus is saying, this is what I'm like. I'll do that. And all it takes is a person just to say, I've blown it. But this unmerciful servant in that story in Matthew 18, he begs the master, I will pay you back. Just give me time and I'll pay you back. Now, how many of you think he really could have paid him back? No, he didn't. He couldn't. And yet he's forgiven. Stories like that, story of the prodigal son, over and over again, they are reinforcing the virtue of mercy and directly connecting mercy to God. But see, the thing is Jesus, if Jesus really meant it, and Jesus taught it, and he not only just taught it, but he lived it. So if he taught these principles, but he actually lived it, when it comes to how God feels about human beings, God is merciful to human beings. His mercy is extended to all human beings. And if you doubt that, if you doubt it, think about Jesus when he was dying on the cross. One of the very last things he said, hanging on that cross, if there was any chance where God would have said, I've had it with you human beings. I've had it with you, and I'm going to wipe you all out because you've committed the worst thing imaginable, and that would be crucifying Jesus. If any time God had the opportunity to say it, he would. But you remember what Jesus said hanging on the cross? What did he say? Forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing. So Jesus didn't just teach it, but he lived it. He lived out this forgiveness, even in his death. So, but why is it that this wonderful truth seems to be distorted? Sometimes we think about God and we think of him like Santa Claus, right? Santa Claus is coming, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. you know, when Jesus comes back, he's gonna do that. The mercy is there for all people, and it's never going to stop. But people have the power to either receive it or to reject it. And when they reject it, they do suffer. But it's never God's intention. The mercy is extended to all. Now, how does this get distorted? What happens to us when we our thinking gets messed up on this? Well, the pain and cruelty of life sometimes can do damage to our image of God. On the one hand, we can read this beautiful, hear these truths about the mercy of God, but somehow things start getting damaged. Life's damages, like that child's story of getting choked out by a bully, that can do damage to a person's image of God, because why would you allow this to happen to me? And in many cases, a person can have a distorted view of who God is. But also, we have a really hard time believing that God is different than us. Because if we can't be merciful, and many of us struggle with showing mercy, because we can't do it, we assume that God, we put our suppositions upon God. And we impose our human frailty upon God. But what happens when, it's something that I think is interesting, when our vision of the mercy of God, the belief that God is merciful, when that becomes distorted, we start living like that unmerciful slave I talked about. The guy who'd just been forgiven a great debt, right? And then somebody owes him $10 for lunch from the next couple days ago. And he goes and chokes that person out. Why do we do that? Why is it so easy for us to do that? Well, then we do something else. We put a spin on Jesus' words. When we read this beautiful beatitude, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy," we sometimes in our twisted thinking imagine that Jesus is saying, "Well, I want you to be merciful, but I'm not going to. You know, I'm going to kill you. This for you, not for me. I'm not going to be merciful." But the truth is that Jesus is merciful. Jesus is describing himself. His mercy is there. For many of us, when we live out of this, what keeps us from showing mercy, what I believe, is that unforgiveness, by not forgiving somebody, it gives you a sense of power. If you think about it, when you choose not to forgive somebody, you can still always hold that against that person, and you can hold on to it and hold on to that anger. And then that makes us feel more superior over one another. So some of you might have figured this out, because I know some of you are pretty smart. But I have some experience with this. Because see, I was the boy in that story. In that story I told you, that was me in 1968. And, you know, for 40 years plus, I live with the pain and shame from that story. And God set me free from that experience. But my way of freedom came from forgiveness. And one of the things that happened to me is that it just dawned on me after 40 years, it had never dawned on me that I need to forgive that boy that choked me out. Never occurred to me that I have to forgive him. What do you mean forgive him? Why should I have to forgive him? No, I needed to forgive him. And what helped me to start the ability to forgive him was that I started thinking, as I look back on it, who was this boy? And why would he do that to me? What was his family like? What was his home like? Where did he ever learn about cursing a father? Where would a young boy come up with that? And it had to be because most likely it had been done to him. And I had to forgive him. But another thing I had to receive was I had to forgive myself and receive God's forgiveness for cursing my dad. And it was a shame that I carried with me for so long of knowing that I just caved under pressure, but I had to forgive. And so as I went through this and even forgive that, God started taking me even deeper to where I had to start looking back at my own relationship with my dad, and who, again, had an explosive temper. And I loved him, but he was an angry man. And I realized that I need to forgive him too. I have to let go of this. I need to forgive my dad. And the pathway for me to really forgive my dad is that I never wondered why my dad was so angry. The thought never occurred to me to say, why was dad so angry? And so a lot of you know me is that I've gone back into my genealogy and I started doing some work on who's my family. And I started finding out about my dad's story. And I found out that my dad was born out of wedlock in 1923. And in 1923, it was a different time than it is now. My grandmother was a mixed race woman, and my grandfather was 16 when my dad, or 17 when my dad was born. They were really young. But my grandfather struggled. My father never had a good relationship with his father, which would be my grandfather, because when my dad was born, he was sent to live with his grandparents for 10 years. And because his parents didn't want him. And then they decided they did want him. And so when he was 10 years old, he went to live with his parents. And so my dad grew up confused about what love meant, confused about who really loved him. But my grandfather was abusive. My grandfather was an alcoholic. He was a womanizer. And he actually died in a mental institution. So when I started thinking about my family, I started looking at my dad differently, because I started seeing my dad and thinking, look what you had to live. Look what you had happening to you. No wonder you are angry. And it really made me start to see and look at my dad with more mercy, and look at him for the things that he had done to me and the anger and all of the abusive things that he had done. I could forgive him for it, because I realized he was just as trapped.